Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of So I Married a Horror Fan. I am one of your co-hosts, Simon.
And I'm Lee.
And today we are rolling along with episode number 72. Episode number...
73.
Oh yeah, last week's episode was number 72. last week's episode, Event Horizon, was number 72. We are here for episode number 73.
We are indeed.
Today we are looking at the A24 version of Event Horizon.
Yeah.
We're looking at, is it a horror movie? Is it not a horror movie?
Mm-hmm.
Sunshine. This was an interesting choice. But before we get into it, I'll let you do the thing that you need to do.
Okay, so Sunshine, written by Alex Garland.
Yeah.
Of The Beach, 28 Days Later, Danny Boyle fame.
Yeah, because he didn't write the script for The Beach, but he wrote the novel. So this is technically their second collaboration as screenwriter filmmaker.
Yeah, he also wrote the screenplay for Never Let Me Go.
Yeah.
And he also wrote three of the Devil May Cry video games.
Yeah.
Ex Machina and Annihilation. Oh, sorry, four, because he's also credited for the definitive edition of Devil May Cry as well.
Mm-hmm.
Man did shit.
I love the fact that you mentioned Ex Machina and Annihilation, because they're the two movies that he wrote and directed, with the third being Men, which is out this month.
Mm-hmm.
But you didn't mention probably my favourite film he's ever written, Dread.
Sure.
Because he wrote the Judge Dredd movie, Dread, which is fucking bananas.
Yep. And then it was directed by Danny Boyle,
mm-hmm.
England's premier filmmaker.
Yeah.
For a good long time, actually, for anyone who doesn't know, did The Beach, 28 Days Later, he did Slumdog Millionaire, he did the play version of Frankenstein with Johnny Lee Mello and Benedict Cumberbatch.
Trainspotting 2,
Yesterday.
He directed that segment of the 2012 Olympics with James Bond as well.
Solid call. And then cast-wise in this movie, we have Cliff Curtis as Searle,
mm-hmm.
Cillian Murphy as Robert Capa, Michelle Yeoh as Corazon, Hiroyuki Sanada as Kaneda. He was originally called Kaneda, I think that's what always confuses me. Rose Byrne as Cassie, Benedict Wong as Trey, Chris Evans as Mace, Troy Garrity as Harvey, Mark Strong as Pinbacker.
Benedict Wong said it wrong.
What did I call him?
He called him Benedict Wong. Then he called him Benedict Wong.
Benedict Wong. And plot-wise, this is the plot line on IMDb. A team of international astronauts is sent on a dangerous mission to reignite the dying sun with a nuclear fission bomb in 2057.
A nuclear fishing bomb?
Fission.
I'm going to ask the most important question about this movie,
mm-hmm.
before we get into this movie. Is this the highest pedigree across the board of a film that we have covered so far in this podcast?
I think it might be.
In terms of filmmaker, screenwriter and cast.
Yeah, I think so. Because the thing is as well, this is a really weird movie because it was made at a point when kind of they weren't really names yet, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think Michelle Yeoh, because, I mean...
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh.
She's Michelle Yeoh.
I mean, in terms of...
I'm trying to figure out where in her career this would be.
So this is 10 years after Tomorrow Never Dies, which is the Bond movie that she did. And it's post-Crouching Tiger.
I was going to say,
but
Bond is not a film I rate her for.
It was Memoirs of a Geisha that piqued Danny Boyle's interest. And Danny Boyle said upon seeing her in that movie and seeing that she was interested in this, he basically gave her the script and said, pick whatever you want. And he even offered to gender flip a role for her.
Mm.
So she's quite far into her.
Not massively. She did a lot of... Chinese films?
Yeah, because she's not in House of Flying Daggers, is she?
No,
but she's in Crouching Tiger
and
Memoirs of a Geisha.
So kind of big names. She did a lot of Chinese films.
I think the three...
I think big film-wise would be she'd done Tomorrow Never Dies,
mm-hmm.
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Memoirs of a Geisha, and then she has an uncredited part in Fearless.
Yeah.
And then it's this. So she was still, relatively early.
The biggest... weirdly enough to say it, because of what had come out the same year and 2 years prior, the biggest name from a commercial standpoint at this point is Chris Evans.
Yep.
Because he'd done the Fantastic Four movies, because Fantastic Four Rise of Silver Surfer came out this year, the same year as this, and he was obviously in the one prior to that, and he was coming off of the back of things like Not Another Teen Movie, which I know... But Cillian Murphy...
No, Cillian Murphy, I think, would be, because this is for Cillian Murphy.
Oh, shit, he was in Batman Begins.
Be on the back of 28 Days Later, Girl with the Pearl Earring, Batman Begins, Red Eye, Breakfast on Pluto.
Oh, yeah, fuck, I forgot, because... He had Batman Begins and Red Eye in the same year.
Yeah. I do realise that I said Breakfast on Pluto as if like it's this massive film everyone knows, but it's a film I really
That's
love.
That's the one where he plays... it. Now, I have to be careful how I word this, because I need to know if it's the right thing. Is he a transvestite or is he a trans person? Because I can never remember...
He's transgendered, I believe.
Because I can never remember whether he is just a transvestite, as in, like, just a man who enjoys dressing up like a woman, or if he's actually a trans...
Trans woman, he
person.
Is.
Yeah, I can never remember which way
he
around
he plays a trans woman leaving Ireland to move to London. But Breakfast on Pluto, if anyone ever hasn't seen it, it's a great film. Oh, I say that. It's been a long time since I saw it, but I remember being quite young and watching it for the first time and really enjoying it.
I had completely forgotten that that film existed until you literally just mentioned
there's
it.
There's a few films like that, I feel like, because there's also... Oh, what's the other one that I loved at the same, around the same era? Velvet Underground?
Yeah, Velvet Underground's one with Christian Bale and Jonathan Rhys-Meyers. It's allegedly based on David Bowie.
Also a cracking movie.
Yeah. But yeah, it's weird, because you look at the principal cast of this movie, other than the guy who plays Harvey, every single other actor in this movie would go on to be in a comic book movie or TV series. Four of the actors in this movie ended up in the MCU. Three of them are in the same fucking MCU movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you think now, looking back on this movie 15 years later, like, Danny Boyle's career went from strength to strength. Because after this, he did Slumdog Millionaire, which he won the Oscars for. He did 127 Hours, Trainspotting 2. He did Yesterday. He was in the conversation for directing No Time to Die. He's slowly, over time, built this really impressive resume. And then, as we say, Alex Garland comes off the back of this. He wrote Never Let Me Go. He wrote Dread. And depending on who you believe... may or may not have actually directed Dread, depending on who you believe.
This was also one of Hiroyuki Sanada's first
English language
films.
Yeah.
Was his first?
Maybe.
Been his first, hang on.
Because it's 5 years after he'd done the original Ring.
No.
The Ring was about 10 years before this.
Ring 2, First Love.
So I was thinking of the remake of The Ring, but he's not in the remake, he's in the original.
Yes. White Countess, maybe? Yeah, so this would be his second, because he was in White Countess with Natasha Richardson and Ralph Fiennes, but that is set in Shanghai.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that would have been an English-speaking role for him.
Well, this is what I mean. So yeah, as I was saying about Alex Garland, he obviously went and did Annihilation, he did... the other one, Ex Machina.
Ex Machina. And my brain was like...
Then he's obviously got Men coming out, which looks really good. But yeah, you look at Chris Evans. Chris Evans basically went from this and did Fantastic Four 2 in the same year, did a couple of other little quiet things, and then ended up in the MCU for like 10 years as Captain America. Benedict Wong did Prometheus. He did a few other bits and pieces. Then he ended up being Wong in the MCU. Rose Byrne did a few... Because after this, Rose Byrne did Get Him to the Greek. She did Bridesmaids. She's in X-Men First Class. And she's in one of the other X-Men. I think she's in two of the X-Men prequels. Cillian Murphy obviously went on to become... He did Jonathan Crane again after this in a couple of the two Batman sequels. Mm-hmm. He did a couple of movies set in Ireland. Like he did The Wind That Shakes the Barley. He did... Peaky Blinders, which everybody obviously knows him for. And he's had a really solid and varied acting career.
He has.
Michelle Yeoh carried on. I feel like...
He also did Watching the Detectives with Lucy Liu, which is a great film.
Because then, like, Michelle Yeoh, in her later years, like, in the last sort of decade, has become... She's gone back to playing more Chinese.
She tends to like, play in a lot of films. She'll characters. Be like the Chinese matriarch yeah. in something.
Shang-Chi. Mulan. She's in the live action remake of Mulan. Yes. She's in that new movie that's not out over here yet, but it's out this week in England. Everything Everywhere All at Once with her weird hot dog fingers. Mm-hmm. So she's had a really good career as well. And then obviously, like, just looking at the rest of the cast, like, Mark Strong obviously went on to do a lot of stuff after this, and Cliff Curtis is in, like, Fear the Walking Dead. He's in Doctor Sleep. He's one of those guys, like, you know his face because he appears in a lot of shit. He's like The Rock's cousin or his brother or some shit in Hobbs and Shaw. He's the fucking guy who runs the auto shop when they go to Samoa. He's like...
Is it?
Yeah, it's him and Roman Reigns.
Oh my
when
god.
They, yeah, yeah, so you know he's the no, guy with the, is, he's yeah. got a massive beard.
Didn't recognise him. But yeah. okay.
Yeah.
See, the thing is, this is really weird. So you look at the cast of this film now, and like, Cillian Murphy. So I. This is one of my picks for this month. So I saw this film. I got the Danny Boyle collection when I was younger. It was this 28 Days Later on the Beach.
Yeah.
And I remember watching this for the first time and falling instantly in love with Cillian Murphy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and look at what his career went on to be, and you're like, holy fucking shit.
I would love to see him do more horror stuff, because he's great in this, he's great in 28 Days Later, he's fucking amazing in Red Eye, and then in A Quiet Place last year, he was yeah. really good in A Quiet Place yeah. as well.
But it's like, when I think, like, so in my current life now, like, I love Chris Evans is Captain America, like, Benedict Wong, no?
Yeah, Benedict yeah. Wong.
Is Wong.
Yeah.
It's because my brain went, he's Wong. And then I was like, wait, is his surname Wong? Or have I just mixed that up? Like, Michelle Yeoh, who... At the time I saw this for the first time, I hadn't seen Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Which is one of, like, the three martial arts movies that I rate as the most amazing martial arts films ever made. Along with House of Flying Daggers and Hero. You know, so there's all these casts. At first, when I saw this film, I didn't really know who any of them were. Yeah. And, like, now looking back, I'm like, when we were talking about who was in this movie, I was like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, because I saw this movie when it came out of the cinema, and I've not seen it since. So that's, a 15-year gap in between, like, viewings. And I remember, at the time, going to see it and being like, oh, it's a Danny Boyle movie. Like, I liked Trainspotting when I was a kid. Like, I liked a few of his other movies. And the only actor in it that I really knew with any certainty was Chris Evans, because at that time he was fucking Johnny Storm. He was the Human Torch.
Yeah.
And then it's weird looking at the movie then, when, because I'm like trying to remember seeing it at the cinema and being like, I don't know who any of these people are, but then now watching it and being like, oh, that's Sinestro from Green Lantern, or that's fucking Shang-Chi's mum, and that's Mei.
It's Arnie, isn't she?
That's Mei from, you know, like, Hiroyuki Sanada, as we were saying earlier. He's the fucking... He's Scorpion in the new Mortal Kombat yeah. franchise. He was the guy in Army of the Dead who recruits Batista and the team to rob the fucking...
He's also in the Marvel Universe, right?
Yeah, he plays one of the Yakuza in
yes.
Endgame. Okay. He's one of the guys... He has the fight with Ronan in the rain, and Ronan kills him literally before Black Widow shows yeah. up. So yeah, it's interesting. And then, like, as I say, you look back at, like, Benedict Wong. I now know him from, like, Prometheus and as Wong.
I haven't seen Prometheus, so to me he's Wong.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And, you know, Rose Byrne. Look at all the stuff Rose Byrne's been in. She's in The Internship, which is one of those movies that we watch all the time.
We do watch it a lot.
Bridesmaids, you know. Yeah. It's mental, but it's, like, the thing that I love about this movie is it seems like... So last week we talked about Event Horizon. This movie seems like the antithesis of Event Horizon. Mm-hmm. This seems like the complete opposite of what Event Horizon is,
yeah.
while at its core kind of being a very similar film.
So this film... So it's been such a long time since I saw this that when I put it on the list, I was like, yeah, like, it's really, like... They're hunting down people on a ship. And then my brain, when we started watching it, I was like, no, that's like the last 10 minutes. Like, this movie is quite literally a Armageddon film.
Yeah. Yeah.
For the majority of its runtime. And a lot of the horror of the film comes from, like, the psychology of being stuck in space. and when things start going wrong with the ship.
Yeah, I think there's like three layers to the horror in this movie. If you want to talk about the actual, if you want to talk about it being an actual horror movie, because it was never marketed as a horror movie. Like, the horror stuff is never, if you go back and watch any of the trailers for this movie, the horror stuff is never mentioned. It's never, ever even remotely hinted at it being a horror movie. Which I think is amazing, because in the days pre-social media, you go and see a movie like this, that last 10 minutes, like, absolutely just, your blows jaw your is mind. On the floor. You're like, this is a completely different movie. But there's, I think there's three levels to the horror in this movie. There's the ecological horror, there's the psychological horror, and then there's the straight up, it's a fucking horror movie. Because if you think about it, like, I, for a really long time, never considered this a horror movie. I was like, it's a movie that has a slightly horror-y ending. But then when you think about it, you think about, like, what the actual mission is and what it means. And I think the actual mission of the movie hits closer to home now and is potentially more resonant 15 years later than it was when the movie came out. Because we've been through things like, we're going through climate change and global pandemics and, you know, all these fossil fuel crises and, like, oil and water and, like, gas and, you know, what are we going to do when the polar ice caps melt and, like, we're having fucking hot periods in fucking October. People are walking around in shorts and T-shirts in October because of climate change. And that's kind of, like, when you start thinking on that level, the movie immediately starts as a horror movie because you are literally talking about saving an entire planet of people because the sun is dying, which means Earth is going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So you're already in that mindset of, like, I understand the situation, like, I understand what this means and how horrifying that is to think that we are literally relying on a crew of, like, 8 people to potentially save the world from a perpetual winter that is going to cause everybody to freeze and die. Then you think about the psychological aspect through the crew's eyes of the immense amount of pressure that is on them and how they start to react to that pressure and the horrors of how quickly they will turn on each other and sacrifice each other to save the people and save the mission.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously you have the fucking ending, which is a slasher movie, essentially. So it's a very layered film.
It is.
But what I mean when I say that it's the antithesis of Event Horizon Event Horizon is a bleak movie that starts bleak and basically fucking is bleak all the way through. Whereas this is a movie that has a bleak premise, but is actually quite a hopeful movie for the majority of it. And it only gets more bleak the more desperate the situation gets. But I think that it always remains hopeful because of Kappa. Because Kappa always has that. He is the one character. He's like the audience avatar of, like, I will do this if not for any other reason other than my family. And he is like the hopeful anchor that goes all the way through this movie. So even when the shit goes down and it's all fucking weird and you have a dude coming in like Dr. Weir who's all like Mr. Crispy and he's like, I've seen the face of God. Like, there's still that whole underlying layer of hope. It's a fucking bleak movie, but it's a bleak movie with a layer of sunshine.
See, I think one of my favourite things about this is that, so with Event Horizon, obviously, we discussed the movie's not very scientific.
Yeah.
It doesn't really get science-y. This movie is actually, like, reasonably science-y.
Yeah.
So, for anyone who hasn't seen it and is listening to us anyway, basically the whole premise is that the sun is dying, but not really. I don't know if you got what they were saying in the film.
Yeah, the weird thing with me is I fucking love science fiction. Like, anybody that knows me, outside of horror, I love science fiction. So Star Trek, Star Wars, real world applications and real world science and things like that, I actually love. I understand very little of it. And I think it's the same with this movie. Like, I have a base understanding of what this movie is about, but the actual minutiae of what the situation is and how drastic the actual situation is and all the square roots and all that shit, I couldn't fucking tell you.
So, basically, the thing is, so the sun isn't dying. So, our sun is dying. it's going to take about 5 billion years, but our sun is dying.
Mm-hmm.
It'll eventually burn itself out.
I reckon the sun will live longer than Earth.
Probably. But yeah, approximations based in science, it's about 5 billion years we've got left before the sun will basically burn itself out.
Mm-hmm.
And the Earth will get hotter during that time. So human race, by the time the sun burns out, probably won't still be here because we will have basically, the sun will have burnt the planet out.
Nice.
But so in this film, that's not what's happened.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a cube ball, which is basically a nucleus left over from the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
That is infecting the sun. So it's got into the sun, it's crashed into it, and it's infecting it and basically killing the sun.
Okay.
So what they're trying to do is use an explosion to destroy the debris of the nucleus so that the sun can continue to burn.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're doing. Weirdly enough, cue balls are an actual thing that CERN scientists were investigating. I think they still are as well, to figure out if that is something that could actually happen.
Is that what the Super Collider is designed for?
Well, the Super Collider is just designed to look into space so we can get a better understanding of how the universe works. So, yeah, they could use it for that. I mean, I wouldn't recommend using the Super Collider to stare into the sun.
Mm-hmm.
Seems slightly unsafe, but I'm probably... My scientific knowledge is, like, as things I'm interested in, I'll know stuff about it. But otherwise, like, after I saw this movie, I spent ages researching whether the cue ball thing was a real thing that could happen. Because I was really panicked about the sun going out. But yeah, no, so that's what it actually is it's a nucleus, and so that's got into the sun that they're trying to destroy so that the sun will start burning again.
Yeah.
Science! But this movie is actually really based in scientific theory. They haven't just gone timey-wimey wibbly-wobbly, unlike Event Horizon.
Yeah.
Like, this is actually, like, Cillian Murphy spent a massive chunk of time with Brian Cox to learn about physics and astrophysics. To kind of get a better grasp of who the character would be and what he would need to know.
Yeah.
To the point where he spent so much time with me, he started copying his mannerisms.
He has the same hair as him in the movie.
He does have the same hair as him. It's a good hair. I mean, the ponytail's not great, but the actual haircut really suits Cillian Murphy.
I kind of want to know, though, how the conversation ended. Do you reckon, like, Cillian Murphy said to him, like, how bad do you reckon it is? And Brian Cox went, things will only get better.
Fuck off, you little prick.
There's only a small portion of our audience that will understand that reference, but I feel like it was worth the risk of making the joke. The thing is, though, like, they gave them, what's it as well, I don't know, they gave them all a book, which was required reading, which was about the first men that landed on the moon.
Yeah, about the men who've landed on the moon.
Yeah.
Yeah, they all had to read it. They also all have backstories. We never find them out in the film. They don't really tell us their backstories. But each of the cast members were given a backstory for their character.
Mm-hmm.
And the clothing design department was given a backstory for their character as well. So that they would be able to fit the clothes to who the person is.
Yeah.
And also so the cast would better understand everyone's motivations behind what is happening.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is really cool. And I like that we don't really find out their backstories. I like that it's just something the cast have. And they're like, we know about these people. We know who they are. Like, we know everything about their lives. And we're just all going, what did they do? Tell us anything. Because outside of the fact that Kappa's got a sister, we don't really know a massive amount about them.
Yeah.
It's like Michelle Yeoh's character. There's too many names, so I'm done.
Carousel.
Yes. Apparently, hers, you know, they were all writing, doing video messages to send home. Her video message was just her looking lovingly into the camera. That's it.
Lol.
To send to her husband.
Nice.
Because she's married. I don't think she ever mentions it in the film. She's married.
The thing is, though, it's one of those things, like, I find this is a thing with, like, sci-fi movies. Sometimes you find out too much about the crew, or sometimes you don't find out anything about the crew. Like, this is the thing that I love, and I will, throughout this entire month, because we're covering space horror, I will always probably go back to referencing Aliens.
Yeah.
Because, like, in the original Alien, you don't really find out anything about the crew.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like their deaths mean any less for not knowing a lot about the crew.
Yeah, it's the same as this, though. You don't really find out anything about them. But their entire story is still so meaningful even without knowing anything about them.
Yeah, that's... And, like, it's weird because, like, there are little... I think there are visual ticks or there are things that the characters do if you've bothered to look up those things that make more sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, But I think the actors do a good enough job of conveying those things, even if you don't know those backstories.
Thing is, I think this movie, a lot like Alien, the sole reason I think it works that we don't know anything about them, and it is something that some movies fail on, is that you don't really know a lot about them, their lives before they were on the ship or whatever, but you learn enough about them from their interactions with each other and how they function as a crew.
Yeah.
That you end up having emotions towards them. Like, Kaneda
mm-hmm.
is really quite protective of Cillian Murphy's character. This is gonna, I'm gonna Kappa. Be really good at Kappa, thank you. And that comes across. I looked it up. He's protective of him because he's not an astronaut.
Yeah.
Kappa's not an astronaut.
Yeah. I find that in all of these movies, there's always one dude who's not like...
Well, he's the scientist. He's the one who's created the
Because in, like, Event Horizon, payload. Weir's the scientist. He's not, like...
Yeah.
He's not an astronaut. One thing I was going to say, actually, like, it's fascinating with movies like this, because I always feel like there are a lot of movies like this where you don't know anything about these people. And I always kind of relate it to, like, blood donors or, like, organ donors. Like, these seven people are responsible for saving the lives of an entire planet.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially other planets in the solar system. I don't know how the sun works in relation to other planets in the solar system.
I don't know.
But that's kind of irregardless. It's not about that. Those eight people die. And we don't know those backstories because we don't need to. And, like, they've saved an entire planet worth of people. 52 billion people or whatever it is owe their lives to these eight people because of what they did. It's like the same as if you go and get a blood transfusion, or if you go and get, like, a donor heart. I have no idea who was on the other end of that thing, but I'm tied to this person because I have their, like, organs inside me or their blood. And I always find that fascinating, this idea of, like, a nameless hero. Like, it's a really fascinating thing to think that somebody, you are responsible for, like, keeping someone else or other people alive, yet that person will go through their entire lives never knowing who you were. But you made this really big sacrifice.
I mean, I feel like with this, it's slightly different. I think people would know.
I know, but I just think it's fascinating. Like,
but yeah, no, I love the cast of this film. I love the characters they give you, and I love seeing their interpersonal relationships. And I think the fact that the cast all lived together, bar Cillian Murphy, who had allowance to go home because his wife was pregnant. They were like, you have to be here during the day, but you can go home at night to your pregnant wife.
Yeah.
Everyone else lived together.
Yeah.
So they could build...
I would love to know what that was like.
I feel like fucking mental.
Like,
I 100% though feel like everyone in their brain immediately goes, well, Michelle Yeoh is obviously the mum of the group. I think it wasn't. I think Chris Evans was the mum of the group.
Yeah.
And Michelle Yeoh was just like the judgy aunt who sits in the corner and goes, you're doing it wrong.
Do you think this is the role that landed in the Captain America audition?
Maybe, actually, because he is very Cap.
Yeah, I was going to say that. There are certain scenes in this, because you people at home don't really need to know this, but we had quite a lengthy conversation about the MCU earlier.
We did.
And a lot of the things we were talking about in relation to his character, especially in, like, Civil
also
War...
also apply to his character in this.
Yeah, he's very, like, take it or leave it, it's my way or the highway, I'm right because of this reason.
A military man.
Yeah, he's like, I will not hear a counter-argument. However, the thing that I find really interesting about this movie, and it's something, I guess when you make a sci-fi movie, it depends on the calibre of actors that you get and, like, what story you're telling. Every single person in this movie is taking it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's something that I really appreciate. It's like when you watch, I know you haven't seen it, but we will watch it at some point. It's like when you watch The Martian. Because The Martian had actual NASA involvement, and NASA co-produced the film with Universal, everybody's taking it seriously. And that's what I love about this movie. It adds that extra layer of realism. Everybody in this movie reacts accordingly to their own personality, their rank, and the reality of the situation. Like, there's that amazing sequence where they go onto the Icarus One, because there's obviously, like every one of these movies, there's a doomed ship that has tried this mission before. And they go, when they go to the Icarus One, and they find the one spacesuit, and it's Kappa, Sol, Harvey, and Mace, I think. Mace, yeah. His character's name. And basically Mace says, well, we've only got one spacesuit. And he's like, Kappa's having it. And Harvey's like, why? I'm the captain. He's like, because the rest of us are further down priority. On the list of the priorities in relation to the mission. And it's like, it's so interesting seeing Harvey, who's clearly a man of science and clearly like...
Well, no, because like, Harvey's the communications officer.
Yeah, but he's like very much based in astronaut training. Whereas Mace is a military man. He's like, we do it. In the chain of command. He's like, fuck the fact that you're the captain or acting captain or whatever.
Yeah, well, because that's the thing, isn't it? Is when he's all like, I should be the one to go, Mace is like, what? The communications officer on a ship that the communications aren't working.
Yeah. And he's like, realistically, if we save your life, could you deliver the payload?
Yeah.
Or is this all going to be a waste of time?
Well, then no one else can, because no one else has the passcodes to get into the payload.
He's like, or are you just doing it because you're a fucking egomaniac?
He's like, well, I'm the captain. And they're all like, we don't care. Yeah, and then it's the next conversation when they're like, somebody's going to have to stay on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
And literally Harvey's like, what is me? And then Searle turns around and goes, no, I'm the least important. I'm the one who stays. Yeah. You two go, because they plan to wrap themselves in duct tape and try and survive space. And then Harvey dies, which is a... what a shame.
Yeah, which again leads credence to an argument that I had with you. Well, not an argument, a discussion when we were talking about Event Horizon.
Where I ended the conversation going, I don't fucking know.
Because my belief is that space. If you're out into the atmosphere of space, like...
you'd freeze to death very quickly, yeah.
Like in that scene in Avengers, where they chuck fucking Ebony Moore out of the bloody ship, and he's like...
Yeah.
Whereas in this one, they're like, yeah! Like, in Event Horizon, the fucking dude survives. It's like, come on, man. Like, this is bullshit. Like, what are you doing?
I don't really know. Space.
Yeah. But no, it's fascinating watching, like, the way the crew reacts. I am kind of interested, though, because they do a bait and switch in this movie, again, like they do in a lot of these movies. Because we see, there's something about the sun in the... And, like, I feel like this is a weird subplot that never really gets paid off.
Mm-hmm.
Because you see throughout the movie, Searle is obsessed with the sun. He keeps just staring at it. And, like, he's watching it and he wants to see it from, like, different brightnesses and different, like, levels. And he's becoming a little bit obsessed with it. And he's becoming a little bit of a crispy man. And then you kind of are led to believe that because we all have that, like, mandala effect. We were like, oh, yeah, he's the one who goes crazy and tries to kill everyone at the end. Because that's what the movie wants you to think until he
gets...
And
the thing is I know what the fucking... I knew who the killer was. My brain still went Searle.
Yeah, because you think, oh, he's left on the Icarus One, and then they make the whole thing about the hull being breached. And you're like, oh, well, we know he's already sunburned because he's been doing this thing. And then they're like, oh, no, there's another dude on the Icarus One. So that's another weird subplot because they set up... I'm like, what is it? Is there one person on every one of these ships who becomes obsessed with the sun?
The writer...
Alex Garland
has said before that it's a metaphor for religion.
Right. Well, I did kind of think maybe that was...
Yeah. Boyle toned it down, I think, quite a lot from what I understand.
Yeah, Boyle's like,
but it was, like, supposed to be... Well, no, because in this case, religion is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be about the search for God and the idea of religion. So on his ship would take the place of kind of the, what's that, the righteous believer.
Uh-huh.
So he's searching for God, and that's why he's spending so long.
Yeah.
And he is the same person as...
Pinbacker.
But Pinbacker found God, and it drove him insane.
Yeah.
So I don't think we're supposed to... I think it's just a leave-over from it being a slightly more...
Yeah.
Metaphorical religious film.
And again, like I say, the antithesis of Event Horizon, which is all about the search. Well, they weren't searching for hell, but they found hell. Whereas in this one, it's about heaven, and he's like...
Well, he's not even searching for heaven. I think it's just... It's like, well, any of those things, isn't it, though? Like, this film is... And you can read it that way still. I honestly believe that of it is about the search for God and whether God is real or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what finding God would do to a person... but it's a really interesting... I love the idea that in this... I don't know how far they were planning on taking this metaphor if it had gone by the original... Because this had, like, 35 script rewrites.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how far it went originally, but I do wonder if it was a left or a leave-over of the more religious aspects of the film.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because as I say, it's kind of, it's the most half-baked subplot in the film. And then it obviously leads to the weird, like,
but I mean, to be fair, I feel a little bit like I would be Serle in that situation.
You reckon?
Like, the sheer curiosity of what the sun would look like that close.
Yeah.
Because humans are intrinsically curious.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd never find myself in that situation, because A, I'm not a trained astronaut, and B, I would not survive that well in space. But...
yeah, it's one of those weird things. And, like, this is kind of where I stumble a little bit with the science in this movie. Because it's all about the sun, and, I mean, he's looking at the sun through the window, and I don't know how far away the ship is from the sun, but I feel like the whole thing with the payload, would the sun not just burn it up?
The payload?
Yeah.
No.
Because they have to get... the ship has to get fairly close to the sun to be able to deploy the thing.
The thing is you forget, this. The ship is shielded.
Mm-hmm.
There's the giant fucking shield that they're repairing at one point.
Yeah.
Which basically, I think, is attached to the payload. So that would go flying off, mm-hmm. and they would set the ship off on the opposite course.
Because I would always just assume that the payload would kind of, like, the closer it gets to the sun's heat would just burn it up.
No, so...
because I don't actually know how hot the sun is. And I've never actually seen a clear picture of the sun, so I don't really know what it looks like. Because I don't think there are actually any clear images of it, really, are there? Not super clear, like...
Yeah, there is.
Or you can see the actual surface of the sun.
Mm.
How did they get them? Because this is what I mean, like, I don't... this is where my lack of knowledge comes into play.
Right, hang on. I'm going to find a...
So, yeah, like, for me, I mean, I get what you're saying, because, yeah, they do have the shield, because it's the shield that they're putting out that causes the comms to go down, because she obviously says that she wants to get them as much shade as possible. But, yeah, I'm always just a bit like, getting anything that close to the sun would just, like, melt it, right?
Not really, yeah. Literal...
that's fucking crazy.
You forget we've got the Hubble. Like, do you realise how close the magnification you can get on the Hubble is now?
No.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads of photos of what the sun looks like close up.
That looks like fucking popcorn kernels.
This.
No, that one there next to it. That this one, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, mate, we can get so close into the sun now. Yeah.
That's mental. That's remarkable.
It's insane, isn't it? I'm trying to figure out, because there's a specific reason. So the payload's a specific thing, and I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, because in my head, I'm just like, getting anything that close to the sun, it would just burn up straight away. Like, it would burn up in the atmosphere, surely.
It's a solar bomb.
Right.
Yeah. So it's using fission.
Science.
Yeah, it's a fission bomb. So it would basically just send like a ripple through,
mm-hmm.
And destroy anything that's caught.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't actually need to get that close to the sun. It can do it from a distance.
They'd have to be reasonably close.
Yeah, but
they
not have close actually... enough for it to like burn up.
Yeah. Well, if you think, so the ship, they were already relatively close to the sun because of how quickly it dropped in. Mm-hmm. But basically, so there was the payload which was attached to the shield. Mm-hmm. There was already then a secondary shield behind the payload. So once they deployed the payload, there was a secondary shield to cover their escape.
Yeah.
There you go.
Let's talk... get away from the sciencey bit, because people don't listen to this podcast for a science lesson from 2
There you go, look. So there's actually an image from the film. So this is the ship with the smaller shield, and then this giant shield that they were fixing earlier is attached to the payload.
Right.
There we go.
What
science! I just like science.
What do you think of the influences in this movie? Did you see any of the influences in this movie?
Yes.
I think it looks very much like 2001: A Space Odyssey. It's very clinical in places. I want to put this out there. This is a gorgeous fucking movie. This movie is stunning.
It's very, very, very pretty.
It's probably Danny Boyle's best movie.
The thing is, as well, is in a moment of time,
or his best looking, at least.
With the Event Horizon, the ship is gorgeous, but the ship is very. It doesn't look like a spaceship would look because you have to sacrifice a lot of shit.
Was that an Event Horizon?
Event Horizon. Yeah. This ship looks and feels, when you're looking at it, like a thing that would actually get sent into space.
Yeah.
Which I like. It actually feels like a real spaceship, whereas the Event Horizon ship does not feel like a spaceship.
Yeah.
Feels like an alien ship.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I love about this movie. This movie does. So this is what I love about Alex Garland's brand of sci-fi in general,
mm-hmm.
is, I mean, Annihilation is completely different because it's based on a book. It's not his original idea. But this and Ex Machina both feel like we're not that far away from them in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So Ex Machina, especially, we are living that reality now.
Yeah, which is terrifying.
Which is frightening. And I don't think, like, realistically, we'll never see something like this in our lifetime, but I feel like at some point this could be a genuine concern. But everything in this movie feels, and that's what I love about Alex Garland's way of writing sci-fi, is everything feels tangible, real, and like, it's not like fucking Blade Runner, for example, where you couldn't imagine living in that reality, but this feels very much like something that could happen. Everything feels very real worldy, but yeah, it definitely feels a lot like 2001: A Space Odyssey. There are moments in it that do remind me of Solaris. The only one I didn't feel like was an alien. I didn't really feel any of the alien influences in it.
I did.
I think maybe with the crew potentially, but like,
I think more so in the characterization. Like, I don't feel like the film, like, straight off ripped off Alien, like a lot of films that are like, oh, you're influenced by Alien, feel like. Mm-hmm. I think the parts of this movie that feel like they were pulled from Alien for me are more the people side of things, of like the actual crew, yeah. and their interactions with each other, instead of it just being like, there's a monster on board, it's chasing us about. They're like, really focused on the human element, which is a big part of Alien. Up until the Xenomorph starts killing them all off, a big chunk of that movie is dedicated to the interpersonal relationships of the crew on this ship. Yeah.
So, we talked about the science stuff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel this movie works as a horror movie? Would you say it is a horror movie?
Rewatching it now as an adult, I feel like it's not,
mm-hmm.
really. I can see the argument for it being a horror movie, but watching it now as an adult, I remember this being... I remember the slashery part of the film being far longer,
yeah.
than it actually is.
Yeah.
Which is why it ended up on the list for this month, because I was like, yeah, it turns into a slasher movie, like, halfway through.
Yeah.
And then it's like, literally, it's like, I was looking at my watch, and I was like, mate, we've only got 15 minutes left of this film, and there's... Nobody's died yet. Like, murdered died.
Yeah. I feel like, and again, I hate to once again compare it to Event Horizon, but I feel like we talk about the horror aspects of it, like with Event Horizon. I feel like they hint a lot at the idea of the crew killing each other because they have limited amounts of oxygen, limited amounts of things that they need to do to get the payload correct and then for them to all make it back safely.
Well, no, because the minute we start discussing killing people off, they were never getting back safely.
Yeah, but because the three of them, Coruscant, Cassie, and Mace, have that conversation, mm-hmm. of like, three of us need to die for the rest of us.
Four of us.
Three need to die for the rest of us to get back. Yeah.
No. That's not the conversation they have. What she says is there's not enough oxygen for all of them. To support all of them.
Oh, yeah, to complete.
If three of them were to die,
they can do the payload.
Then the four of them would be able to
do the mission.
Do the payload.
Yeah.
But once the garden gets burnt up, they know they're not getting back to Earth. So they're literally making a decision at that point of whether to kill people early to complete the mission, and then they will die anyway, or just sacrifice all of them and let Earth burn.
But I feel like if they really wanted to lean into the horror aspects of it, that's the start of stuff that they hint at halfway through the film, of the crew potentially turning on each other, having conversations about killing each other, blah, blah, blah. But it's more for survival rather than, like, we have gone mad, we can't stand each other. And I feel like if they leak... Because there are tense moments in this movie, and I feel like that's probably why the ending is so left-field, because up until the bit with Pinbacker, there are psychological aspects of it. It is a thriller, it's a tense movie. You are concerned for these people, you are concerned for who is going to live or die, but it's never in a... holy shit, like, I'm scared, like, a horror movie way.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like once they'd decided on that ending, drip-feeding a little bit more dread and paranoia and, like, that kind of stuff, and maybe hinting at a larger threat. And that's why, again, I think it would have made more sense if Searle had been Pinbacker rather than having Pinbacker come from the other ship. Because they were, like, leading you to believe that Searle was going crazy. So why not just have him do it rather than Pinbacker? And it would have made more sense that they're having to fight an enemy from within when they're already thinking about killing each other.
Mm, true.
But, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. I see the argument for why this is a horror movie. As I laid out at the beginning of the episode, there are layers of horror to it. But I think as a straightforward horror movie, it kind of Trojan horses the horror in at the end, but I don't think it was ever intended to be a horror movie. But that's not to say that it doesn't necessarily work as one. I just think it all depends on your interpretation. I guess it's a bit like Parasite in that sense. If people look at Parasite and go, that's a fucking horror movie. Whereas other people look at Parasite and go, what are you fucking chatting about? So I think it all depends on your perspective and your personal viewing experience and how you would react in said situation to whether you find it a horror movie or not. But that's not to take away anything from the film. The film is fucking brilliant. Also, I don't like how it starts glitching towards the end.
See, it starts glitching once Mark Strong's character, Pinbacker, gets aboard the ship.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's a purpose... Yeah. Full choice. Because I think we're supposed to be viewing it kind of how Pinbacker's viewing it. Yeah,
it's definitely a choice. Let's put it that way. It's weird, right? Because it's...
But I mean, to be fair, it's a very Danny Boyle decision.
Yeah, because he does do a lot of these weird...
He does weird stuff constantly.
Because, like, in The Beach, he does, like, a lot of weird, like, hallucinatory stuff, doesn't he? I haven't seen that movie, but I've seen bits and pieces of it. But yeah, I feel like if you want to call this movie a horror movie, I certainly think it's more of a horror movie than the other three movies that we're going to cover after this, which are more action horror, especially this movie. I don't know why I'm being vague. Pitch Black, Goes to Mars and Starship Troopers. Fucking satire, action movie, Vin Diesel bullshit.
Pitch Black is great. Don't you dare for bad mouth. I'd say that. I haven't seen Pitch Black in a really long time. This isn't a lot of this film. I picked it having not seen it ever. Yeah. I don't really watch space movies. And I had to choose something.
Yeah. But I think this movie is incredible. I said it moments ago. I think this is Danny Boyle's best movie. I certainly think it's his best looking movie. And kind of re-watching it with fresh eyes 15 years later, I think I have a newfound appreciation for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I loved it when it came out, but it's one of those movies, for some reason, I just never revisited. I don't know why, but yeah, I think it's... I'm glad we covered it, and, like, it's interesting viewing it through 2022 eyes. Mm. But yeah, it's a really good film, and do you think the movie would have benefited from cutting the ending?
I like the ending. I like the left field plot twist. I don't know why. I've always been a fan of it.
Yeah, it's just weird, isn't it?
It is. It just comes from nowhere. But I think that's part of the joy of this movie, is it is just so left field, and you're like, what the fuck? But again, I do feel like it's a massive part of that. It's all of the script rewrite. Something was probably lost somewhere that made it all make just a little bit more sense.
Yeah, I would have thought so. But yeah, it's. I'd like to see Danny Boyle do more sci-fi stuff. I think I'd be interested in him doing something similar along these lines. And you can. It's weird because you can definitely see the influence that is taken from other movies. But you can also see how it's influenced other movies, like
after it
as well. And I think it's one of those, and I think that, to be honest, like a lot of movies, is a testament to its legacy, is the fact that you can see bits of it in other films. But yeah, I think that you made a good choice picking this.
Thanks.
Because otherwise, you'd have ended up watching some shit like Alien Resurrection. but yeah, what would you rate it?
I'm gonna give it
a yawn out of five.
It's quite late. Part of me wants to give it a 4, but then part of my brain is like, I can't think of any reasons that I'm saying 4, just that I don't think it deserves a 5. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't think it's a 5 axe movie, but my brain just gone, then in that case it's a 4. Wait, I don't really, like, what's the question? But yeah, like, it's a great film. It's held up really well. The special effects are still great in this film. I love,
especially with the subliminal imaging.
Yes, I love the cast, I love the characters. I think it's really well written, it's really well directed. The production on it is top level. And yeah, like, in all honesty, my brain just is saying I can't give it 5 stars. So therefore, it's a 4-star movie.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. This movie is way better directed, written and acted than what would essentially be in another director and crew's hands, a B movie. Like, you think, like,
in another director and crew's hands, this would be Event Horizon.
Or, as as you referenced earlier, it would be Armageddon.
Yeah.
Like, because Armageddon is more of a dude... Armageddon is the dude bro version of this movie.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
And I always love that on the commentary on the Blu-ray for that movie, when Ben Affleck, like, says to Michael Bay, would it not have been easier to train astronauts to be drillers than to train the drillers to be astronauts? And Michael Bay just goes, shut the fuck up, Ben. I just see that. And I was like, that is kind of that movie in a nutshell. But yeah, like, this movie has held up incredibly well. It has an amazing cast, amazing writing, amazing acting, amazing director. And I think for that alone, that makes it a 4.5. I think for me, the only thing that I would change is I would have gone whole hog one way or the other. I would have just kept it a straight sci-fi movie and cut the ending, or kept the ending and added in more horror elements. And I think that was the struggle. I think if Alex Garland had his way, there probably would have been more of the horror stuff in it. Whereas I think Danny Boyle was probably more interested in the sci-fi aspect and making a homage to films that he liked.
Yeah.
Like Solaris, 2001, etc.
Made Boyle say he would never make another sci-fi movie.
Really?
Yeah.
That's a damn shame.
He hated making it. He said it was so stressful.
Mm-hmm. I think at some point we should cover Annihilation, because Annihilation is fucking good.
And Ex Machina. I want to do Ex Machina.
Yeah, but Ex Machina is not a horror movie, so probably won't watch it.
We can just watch it. I mean, but we don't have to watch a film specifically for one.
No, but what I was saying is we should watch Annihilation for the podcast, because it's fucking great, and I want to see you react to that one scene. But yeah, so for me, I would say it's a 4.5, because yeah, of all the reasons we've outlined.
I'm saying 4 because my brain says it's a 4.
Yeah. Also, I feel like we didn't really touch upon it, but we did mention it very briefly. Very good representation across the cast.
Yes.
This is a very diverse cast.
Mm-hmm.
And it has very strong female characters as well.
It does.
Because both Cassie and Carazon both take charge in this movie. They are both very, very well written, strong female characters in 2007, which is fucking nuts to say, when you had movies where Jessica Alba was being forced to stand there in her underwear as an invisible woman. You've got two characters who more than hold their own, which is interesting for a sci-fi movie of this calibre. Every character is written incredibly well, and at no point does anybody feel like a lesser character than any of the others, which is really, really good. Big up Alex Garland for being a G. So yeah, that's our thoughts on Sunshine. Have you guys seen Sunshine? Do you enjoy Sunshine? Answer the question for us. Do you think it's a horror movie? Do you not think it's a horror movie? Go back and check out our other two episodes for May. We did Event Horizon last week, and we did an episode on Friday for our 5x5, which was on our top five aliens in popular culture. We will be returning next week with the man, the myth, the legend,
Vin Diesel,
in a movie where he's not talking about family, he's talking about aliens. We're going to be doing Fast and Furious : Pitch Black. Richard B. Riddick. I just realised his name is Dick B. Riddick.
Is it Richard?
Yeah, because his name is Richard B. Riddick, which is...
Is it?
Dick B. Riddick. Which is ridiculous. So yeah, we're going to be looking at the other franchise.
Yeah.
We're going to be looking
the
at...
Other.
Yeah, because he's got the Fast franchise, then he's got Triple X, then he's got Riddick, then he tried to start that fucking Last Witch Hunter shit, then he's in the MCU, then he may or may not play Dungeons & Dragons.
And he's in Scorpion King.
No, he's not.
That's The Rock.
He tried to get Bloodshot popping, didn't he? And that fucking went nowhere.
He did, that's true.
So yeah, we'll be looking at the one that kickstarted it all.
We are not covering his best movie, though, which makes me sad, because that's The Pacifier.
Oh, fucking hell. That's depressing that in a fucking... But then, to be fair, like, outside of franchise work, what the fuck has Vin Diesel actually done?
Bad Boy Lady.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's not really a thing, is it? But yeah, so we're going to be looking at Pitch Black next week. Weirdly enough, a movie I've never seen.
Have you not?
I've seen Chronicles of Riddick. I've seen Chronicles of Riddick, and I've seen Riddick, and I played the video game, The Chronicles of Riddick Escape from Butcher Bay, but I've never actually seen Pitch Black.
We went and saw Riddick together in the cinema.
No, we didn't.
Why did I think I went to see it with you?
Well, it came out in 2013. We didn't meet till 2014, so unless you had a time machine.
Who did I see Riddick with? I don't know.
Anyway.
I honestly had no idea. I'd never seen the first one. That's ridiculous.
Anyway, we're going to be doing Pitch Black next week. So join us for a lot of really bad Vin Diesel impressions.
Well, not from me, because I don't do them.
Family. And then we will be looking at that. So come find us on social media, SIMAHF pod on Twitter. So I'm Married a Horror Fan, all one word, all lowercase, Tumblr and Instagram. As I say, go back and check out all the other episodes. As always, thank you for your continued support, guys. We greatly appreciate it. Stay spooky, stay safe, take care, bye-bye.
Bye.